welcome to the Start Good Things podcast for episode 3. My name is Eric Bryant.
And I am Rob Overholt.
Today we have an interview featuring Dr. Marcus Goody Goodlow, author of Kingmaker, Lessons We Can Learn from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Rob, I don't know if you know this, but as a kid, I always looked up to Dr. King. His birthday is the day before mine, and the day after my birthday is Andy Kaufman. And also, I found out later, Jim Carrey. So I always grew up with this desire to kind of be a combination of Dr. King and Andy Kaufman or Jim Carrey.
Not sure what that looks like, but I kind of have a funny feeling we're about to find out.
Well, actually, I have a little brain teaser for you. I want you to see, Rob, if you can tell the difference between Dr. Seuss and Dr. King quotes. I have some quotes. You think you can do this?
Oh, wait, hold on. Okay, so this is like a game you're bringing to the table here. Like, is this Dr. Seuss or is this Dr. King?
That's right.
Are you sure you want to go there, Eric?
Let's do it. Are you ready?
All right, I'm game.
All right, is this Dr. Seuss or Dr. King? Why fit in when you were born to stand out?
I'm going to go with Dr. Seuss.
You're right. Okay.
Boom.
Number two. In the end, we will remember not the words of our enemies, but the silence of our friends.
Gonna go with Dr. King.
Boom.
All right, 2 for 2.
Number 3. Sometimes the questions are complicated and the answers are simple.
I think I'm gonna go with Seuss.
Wow. All right, you're doing well.
All right.
Okay, so here's another one. Is this Dr. King or Dr. Seuss? We must learn to live together as brothers or perish together as fools.
That's got to be Seuss.
No. All right, here we go. Number 5. I'm going to stump you on this one. You'll miss the best things if you keep your eyes shut. Dr. Seuss or Dr. King?
Well, I'm going to get... That's actually hard.
You'll miss the best things if you keep your eyes shut.
It sounds very Seussy, but it could... I'm going to go with King.
It was Seuss!
Oh!
I'm going to stump you at least once. In episode 1 of the Start Good Things podcast, we interviewed John Burke, a spiritual entrepreneur as well as an author of Imagine Heaven. In episode 2, we interviewed Brad Lominick, a leadership guru. If you missed those, go to startgoodthings.com.
And today we're focusing on social entrepreneurship, and we're talking to Goody Goodlow about Dr. Martin Luther King. And each week we try to tell you a little bit about who we are and what we're all about, and we do that in sort of a comedic fashion from time to time. Last episode we did the big Star Wars, you know, who we are, and then, you know, first episode was 2001 Space Odyssey. This week we got, you know, we do have to be careful. It would be so easy. It would be just too easy to go with, you know, yo, we have a dream that ordinary people working together can accomplish extraordinary things. You know, but I mean, that's just so easy. And, you know, I don't even know how classy it is. I mean, to be like, we have a dream that when this happens, it makes for a better humanity and a better future for all people.
Yeah, that just doesn't make sense.
I mean, it doesn't feel right.
Way too audacious to say something
totally.
Like, we have a dream and a better future. We have a dream of an army ready to invest in the efforts of the uncommon individual.
Yeah. I think we should just steer clear of that kind of talk. I mean, that's a little over the top. At this point, we shouldn't even have to be that audacious. You go to startgoodthings.com. You can find out all about us.
So instead, let's just listen to Dr. Goody Goodlow.
Eric and I have with us one Goody Goodlow. So we have Goody Goodlow on the Start Good Things podcast. That's a whole lot of good, and it sounds like something that was just meant to be. We're excited to have Goody here with us. It's going to be an amazing conversation. Eric, why don't you tell us a little bit about Goody as you go way back with him?
We do. Dr. Marcus Goody Goodlow and I have known each other for a good while. We have all sorts of similarities, both married to amazing women in the medical profession. We both have a daughter. We both have a son. We were both part of a team at Mosaic for several years. We both have some connections in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. We both love Dr. Martin Luther King, but we have some differences, too.
Dr. Goodloe was a quarterback at the University of New Mexico, and I played trumpet in the band at Baylor University. He grew up in Compton. He has a PhD at Dallas Baptist University. He is part of the teaching team. He's the teaching pastor at Parkcrest Christian Church, which is in Long Beach, California. He is an author. He is a speaker. You can find him at goodygoodlow.com. We're so excited to have you, Goody, especially with your new book that's out, The Kingmaker. We want to talk all about it today, but thanks for joining us on the Start Good Things podcast.
Oh, it's great to be with you, Eric and Rob. But Eric, you forgot one similarity as well. One more.
We both
used to have hair.
That's right. That's right. In fact, I learned from you how to take that Bic and just shave that head.
That's right.
I used to do it a little differently, but I watched how you did that on that one trip. I think we were in New York City together.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
So that's it. That's a great segue, Goody, to a question that I have.
Sure.
You sir, are a you hold a doctorate. My good friend here, Eric, has doctor in his title. I am the lone person on this call without doctor in his title. So I'm feeling a little bit misplaced, speaking for the common man. And then we're talking. I will mention, though, I am the only one on this podcast, on this call right now that has hair. So I do have that
cue.
It's a good head of hair, too. Anyway, it's gray, but it's good. So my question is this. You've written a book called The Kingmaker, and it's lessons that we get from Dr. Martin Luther King. So now we have another doctor, and a doctor who is a king. This is Dr. King. He's a doctor. He's a king. How does the common man, me speaking for the common man here, aren't you setting the bar a little high, Goody? I mean, he's a little unattainable. He's untouchable. What do we learn from Martin Luther King?
Well, no, good question. No, leadership is a high bar. I mean, it make no mistake about it. I mean, the interesting thing about Dr. King's life, as well as every other leader I've studied, certainly in our current context in history, is these individuals, women and men, are not infallible. They're not void of mistakes and character flaws. They're human, like me, like you. They have had challenges in their life and ebb and flow of life. They've made mistakes. They've hurt people. They've caused a great deal of disturbance. But the beauty of life and of their leadership is, I often say, life, like leadership, is not like baseball. It's not three strikes and you're out. It's more like bowling. And you get a chance to pick up a spare. And when you look at the sort of totality of King's life, man, the vast impact, the majority, the balance of his life was giving to advance the cause of justice and equality for our nation. And the beauty of that is, even though he achieved great things, he didn't aspire to be great. I think he had a passion to see the lives of other people be better. And by that definition, we all have the capacity to be kingmakers. We all have the capacity to reach our fullest redemptive potential when we spend our lives invested in making the lives of others better. So whether your last name is King or Holt or Bryant or Goodlow, we have the capacity to make the lives of others better. And by that, we can all be kingmakers.
That's a beautiful statement, Goody. And looking at your website, kingmakermovement.com, we can all be kingmakers. Tell us about this book, because I know even as you were working on your PhD and we would share our library of Dr. King books, now you have an important book that I think we can all learn from. Entrepreneurs, artists, people who are trying to start good things. There are leadership lessons, you say, in this book in working with athletes and entertainers. So tell us, how can we, maybe we don't have connections to Hollywood or the NFL. I know you get to do some great, you know, speak as a chaplain at different NFL teams and all sorts of college teams. But for the rest of us, how do we access people of influence to make a bigger difference?
Sure. No, good question, Eric. You know, for me, you know, it started based upon, you know, my life and, you know, growing up in the inner city of Compton, California, here in Los Angeles, and then being an athlete and then getting a chance to work alongside some amazing people like yourself and the people at Mosaic, Irwin McManus and others, and even in my time in Dallas at various other ministries. Let me back up for a second. The term kingmaker, obviously, there's a play on words there. But basically, when you look at that formal definition, it's the understanding that that a person inherently has some type of influence, power, resources, money by virtue of a bloodline, for example. So I read an article a couple of months ago that the recent heir to the throne, the child that was born the most recent in the British United Kingdom, he's worth $5 billion and he's barely a year and a half, 2 years old.
Wow.
So if you take that definition and sort of flip it, King did not inherit any great name, no great fame, no great fortune. He didn't have a region or country named after him. He was born three generations of a preacher, if you will. The thing that he brought into the context in which he lived was a conscience and a moral disturbance that he was convinced that had to be addressed on behalf of the nation. And so when I look at his life and what he was able to do, King recognized that there were people of great influence and affluence in our society. 50 years ago, he became the pastor of athletes and entertainers, and along with blue-collar workers, everyday educators, business people, union workers, King's basically recruited some of the most influential people in his context. And if you look at the political, social, moral, spiritual landscape of our society today, 50 years plus later, your Bonos, your John Legends of the world, your Clayton Kershaws, your Kareem Abdul-Jabbars of the world, Kobe Bryant, who I think is the greatest person to ever live in terms of playing a sport, but that's a whole nother story. when you look at these Serena Williams, for example, when you look at women and men of the sports and entertainment industry, they are people who have the microphone. They are people who are on stages. We buy their products. We go see them in concert. We purchase their tickets to go see their movies. We will buy clothes because they say buy them. And so Dr. King saw that influence. They used their affluence and influence to create their craft, to showcase their talent. And so King said, listen, athletes and entertainers, you're not removed from being global citizens to help bring about a change to the conditions in which our nation finds itself. And so you may not be a social justice person. You may not necessarily be a person who is so well versed in civil disobedience. However, you are human. And so Dr. King took the civil rights movement and made it a human movement. And so he solicited the support of Harry Belafonte, Charlton Heston, Marlon Brando, Sammy Davis Jr., Jackie Robinson, Josephine Baker, Nina Simone, Joan Baez, et cetera, et cetera. And he basically put them on notice, but he also recruited them and said, listen, I need your help in order to advance the causes of justice. And so by that, it doesn't matter if you are in the industry per se, or if you're an athlete or an entertainer per se. What matters is if you're human. And if you're human, you have the capacity to care and to see things that are not right about our society. And so wherever you are, in whatever context, use your influence and affluence to make the world better. And by that, we all can become kingmakers. Now, obviously, what I tell people in the book, Kingmaker, we're all equal in essence, but we're not equal in influence. So we're created in the Imago Dei, in the image of God. I believe that. I'm a person of faith. I know you two are people of faith. Some of our listeners are people of faith. But what I believe, what I'm convinced of, is that we are made in the image of God. Psalm 139 affirms this truth. God, we are fearfully and wonderfully made. But I do not believe we're all equal in influence. What I mean by that is there are certain individuals with unique gifts and talents and skills that I believe God has gifted them in order to speak to people of influence and affluence at a greater level and a greater degree, i.e., the Irwin and McManuses of the world, the Tony Evans of the world, the Steve Kellys of Wave Church of the world. When you think about women and men like that, or you know, leaders like that, you think of people who are able to speak and to build relationships in a way that help move people forward, who for the most part would maybe be guarded, be reluctant. These people, let's face it, they get people, you know, coming at them from every which direction. But it takes a very unique person to sort of be their pastor, if you will, and I'll close on this point. They have needs and issues just like you and me. They have challenges in their life just like all of us. And so, as Biggie says, it's simply more money, more problems. So, you know, we became pastors to people of influence and affluence. As you know, Eric, when we were here in Los Angeles at Mosaic, it would be nothing to look in the audience and to see someone who was in a television show we had just seen on TV or in a movie, or who was recording an album, or who was someone of great influence and affluence. But what we found is that they have needs, spiritual needs, emotional needs, relationship needs, if you will. And so wherever you are, use what you have to make the world better. And whether you're a stay-at-home dad, a small business owner, a working mom, an educator, a person who just is an artist, a thriving artist or an aspiring artist, use what you have to make the world better.
What I love about what you're saying in many ways is there's this idea that we need to have. The resources we have are exponential when we start thinking about who we know. And
that's right.
Helping them see what we're trying to do. I think a lot of entrepreneurs, if we're not careful, we can get caught in this trying to do it all by ourselves. But all of a sudden, it's not that we just need people who will invest in our money, but people who will represent us in other conversations. So looking at our set of resources as part of helping our mission come to pass. Is that what you're seeing some of these other kingmakers learning from Dr. King and doing even in our present day?
Yeah, no question. A couple of points, you know, Rob, Eric, a couple of things. One of the things I talk about in the book, for example, is I base the book on what I call 10 leadership principles or 10 powers or the principles or these insights. And it's not a walk down memory lane type book so much, although I do tell stories and I tell parables, real stories. I also tell my story. But it's a book that's meant to really engage an immediate conversation in any context. So, for example, I've taught the leadership principles from Kingmaker to various groups, from faith context, communities, to the military, to Chick-fil-A, to State Farm representatives, to universities, athletic programs, to business leaders. And what I do is I basically take the leadership principle. I tell a story of Dr. King's life to affirm that principle. And then I bring relevance to the context in which we find ourselves today. So what I tell people is, I mention Rosa Parks in my book, but I also talk about Taylor Swift in my book. So, you know, one leadership principle is, in something we can relate to in any context, is the power of request. The power of request. And so I say, what dreams, what goals, what ambitions are you forfeiting in your life because of your refusal to ask others for help? The power of request. And so
so powerful. Goody, you're speaking my language. We talk a lot about that with folks all the time in the coaching that I've done and my wife have done with folks. We always say, stop saying no for other people. That's not your job.
Yes.
That's their
yes.
job. Your job that's is it. To ask. Their that's job right. is to say yes or no. So
that's it. No, that's totally it. And I say, you know, one, you know, we used to have a saying on Mosaic: if you want to go fast, go alone. But if you want to go far, go with others. And so one of the things I talk about is, if you're achieving a dream or goal and ambition by yourself in a silo, exclusively with all your efforts only, your talent and skills only, guess what? You're dreaming too small. What dreams, what goals, what visions do you have in life that demand you to solicit the support of others? Because Dr. King had that. In 1956, he is on this momentous victory, the Montgomery bus boycott. He's 27 years old. The media begins to sort of get a buzz about who he is. He's a preacher. He travels to New York. Why? He wants to have a meeting with a guy named Harry Belafonte, who himself was an activist as well as an entertainer and artist. And he requests a meeting of him. They sit in the basement of a church in New York called the Abyssinia Baptist Church, pastored by Adam Clayton Powell. And he looks across from Harry Belafonte and he says, Harry, I know you're an artist. I know you're a singer. But I also know that you care about these issues that I care about. You've been on the fight longer than I have. He says, I think we're on to something. I have no idea where we're headed, though. And then he looks across from Harry to Harry Belafonte and he says these words, "I need your help." The power of request.
Mm-hmm.
And so we talk about what precludes us from asking others from help. And we land at the conversation for that answer. It's pride. Pride says, "I got this. I can make it on my own. I don't need, I am the master of my faith, the captain of my ship. I can do this on my own." Pride, you know, it's interesting in the scriptures, as, again, as people of faith, I tell people, you know, there's only one sin God opposes in all of the scriptures. Now, we know God is holy, but there's one sin that he actually opposes. He opposes the proud. He takes issue with that. And so the word pride literally means to be puffed up. To make yourself appear to be, you know, I grew up in South Central LA, I mentioned, but I am somewhat familiar with wildlife and different type of animals. Some of them are incapable of warding off their prey. And so there are fish that can do that. There are certain animals. And so you know what they're able to do? They're able to puff themselves up. They're able to make themselves appear to be bigger than what they really are. And so when you think of pride, you think about a person puffing themselves up to be something bigger than what they're trying to mask, an insecurity, a weakness, a flaw. And so a person with pride says, "I got this." But a person with humility says, "I need help." A couple of years ago at USC, there was a star running back. He was in the weight room by himself, and he was lifting weights. And the bar slipped from his hand, crushed his larynx, his neck, and he was rushed to the hospital, almost died. He never played at a high level again. And this guy was expected to be playing on Sundays. Mm. His parents just settled a lawsuit with the University of Southern Cal about a year and a half, 2 years ago. And the NCAA, Rob, Eric, issued a report. It said the coaching staff was negligent. The strength coach was negligent. In fact, I believe he was terminated. But it also said something interesting. It said the player was negligent. You know, when we go to a gym, there's all kind of rules written on the board. No food, no eating and drinking inside, no loud music. Get in, get your workout and get on. Be respectful of another person waiting to get on the equipment. But there's always one rule written in red. Do not attempt to lift the weight without a what?
Spotter.
Spotter partner.
Without a spotter. We all need spotters.
Yeah.
And so the weight of injustice and social discord and inequality was too big for one woman or one man to lift. And so Dr. King looked at the human landscape and said, "I need to marshal what he called a coalition of conscience. I believe that there are other people who believe like I believe, that what we're seeing in this nation is not right. How people are being treated is not right. And oh, by the way, I think there are some people who, if I can reach them, the amplification of the sounds of justice and fairness and equality will go further, much further than I could as a preacher." And so he got the support of these athletes and entertainers. And what they were able to do in a span of about a 9.5 to 10 years was simply breathtaking.
Yeah.
It was simply remarkable.
Well, Goody, first of all, thanks for the time today. Thanks for the book you've written. This is compelling stuff. I could listen to you all day long, actually.
Thank you so much. I appreciate
it. It's good.
That. Thank you.
And but one question that we like to ask all of our guests here on Start Good Things is this. So here's the context. You're on an elevator. On the elevator with you, you are joined by an entrepreneur who has altruistic intentions, meaning that they want to do something meaningful, powerful. They want to be a kingmaker. They want to start something good that has impact on humanity. You have 30 seconds to get to the bottom floor, and only 30 seconds. So you have 30 seconds to give them one piece of indispensable advice. Goody Goodlow, what is that advice?
Oh, as a person of faith, that's simple. It would be fear the Lord and honor his teachings. Ecclesiastes chapter 12 says, here's the conclusion of the matter. You know, Solomon goes on this search about life and about purpose, trying to make sense of his life. What does he do with his life? Is all of this meaningless? And so when you think about an average person, sometimes those struggles are consistent with those themes. And so I would tell a person, seek wisdom, you know, seek God's face, seek his teachings, and pursue that. And regardless of what you're trying to do in life, it all begins there. Ironically, it begins where the end of chapter 12 of Ecclesiastes starts, right there. So I would say, fear the Lord and keep honoring his teachings. And if you begin there, you can never go wrong in what you're doing, period.
All right.
Excellent.
Ding. There we go. That's the ride. Great, great.
One other question we always like to ask, if you were on Magic Johnson's Dodgers and you're walking up to the plate,
yeah.
What would that music be? What is your walk up to the plate
music?
Easy.
Oh, that's easy. That's easy. So I'm a huge U2 fan.
All right.
So it would be probably Magnificent. It's from their former album, but I just took my daughter to her third U2 concert.
You're the only person that listened to that record, I think. No,
oh, no.
Rob is also a big fan.
Yeah, I'm a huge U2 fan too. Mine would actually be, I would walk out on a baseball field to Pride in the Name of Love. Ooh, I just trumped you. I got a Bono and a Martin Luther King. What? And Pride. What? A good form of Pride. What? Well, I'm on fire.
That's right. No, that's right. Good call. And no, I appreciate the opportunity to hang out with you guys. And thanks so much for everything you're doing to make the lives of others better. You two, both Rob and Eric, I formally acknowledge you today as king makers.
Oh, man. It's great to hear your voice, Goody. Thank you for what you're doing. Thanks for spending time with us and keep doing your great work.
Goody, we appreciate you, man. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
That was a great chat with Dr. Goody Goodlow. We want to thank you for joining us today on the Start Good Things podcast, and we want to close episode 3 with the immortal words of Dr. Martin Luther King in honor of his legacy that he's left for us. And may his dreams be realized.
So even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up, live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that my poor little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.